May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. Amen. What is black and white and red all over? A newspaper. But is that the only answer? What am I hearing from the choir? We got another answer back there? All right. I'll tell you what the internet says. A penguin with a sunburn. A crossword puzzle done in red ink. A chocolate sundae with ketchup on top. A nun with a paper cut. There are lots of answers, but anyone who's ever taken a standardized test knows that we are meant to darken the circle. They don't even darken circles anymore. Choose on the iPad or however you're taking your test the best answer, right? Look for the best answer. Today, we're going to talk about multiple answers to the riddle of the meaning of life, and we're going to search for that best answer. We do this by way of Athens, Greece, where Paul finds himself seeking refuge from a mob that is after him because of his answer to this riddle, what is life's meaning? Now, you'll remember, Paul was formerly Saul, and after Jesus' death and resurrection, when the church was still in its infancy, Saul persecuted the followers of Jesus. But he met Jesus on the road to Damascus. Remember, he was blinded. And then became the church's most ardent early missionary. Well, at this point in the book of Acts, Paul is on one of his missionary journeys and has recently been run out of town. First in Thessalonica, and then the same guys who ran him out of town there heard that he was having some success with his message in Berea, so showed up in Berea to run him out of there too. These outside agitators posed a threat to Paul, so some other believers executed a rescue mission to get him safely to Athens. Now, unfortunately, this plan involved leaving colleagues Timothy and Silas behind. And we pick up the story this morning with Paul in Athens waiting for his friends to show up. And while he's there killing time, he notices something about the city. It is full of idols. And so he heads to the synagogue to argue with the Jewish leadership there. Shouldn't the synagogue have the influence to curb the city's idolatry? What exactly were they doing to combat this ignorant and blasphemous idol worship? Paul also argued in the marketplace with anyone who happened to be there. And finally, some who heard from him took him to the Areopagus to share his views in a more formal setting with those who liked to hear the latest ideas. Athens was the intellectual hub of the ancient world. And though the ancient world had the highest regard for those things that were old, history, tradition, precedent, they were also interested in hearing new ideas. We are similar in that we tend to also default to history, tradition, and precedent. If you spend any time in a meeting here at church, you'll hear things like, well, the way we did it last year was, we've always done it like so, the tradition here at Bethlehem is, we all know those tropes about church, right? So we have that in common with the ancient world. But where that commonality stops is that when the Athenians recognize that Paul brings new ideas, rather than shut him down, as happened in Thessalonica and as happens far too often in our day, they ask to hear more. They want to hear him in his own words, not what someone else is saying about what he's saying. They want to hear from him directly. And they offer him a kind of intellectual charity. Or maybe we could call it intellectual hospitality. They say, It sounds rather strange to us, so we would like to know what it means. And they take him to where ideas are shared, and they give him the podium. What's black and white and red all over? There are multiple answers. What is the meaning of life? Well, the Athenians are up for considering the possibilities. Okay, so Paul takes the microphone in the Areopagus. Not really, they didn't have microphones back then, but he's got their attention. And he begins by reporting what he has observed during his time in their city. I see how extremely spiritual you are in every way. For as I went through the city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, "To an unknown God." What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you. Paul embraces their intellectual hospitality and responds by offering some of his own. We have to understand that as a Jew, those idols would have been horrifying to Paul. Idolatry is a sin that Israel struggled with throughout its history, and we have the historical record of the Old Testament that God did not take too kindly to that kind of thing. And so we would expect that Paul, a Pharisaic Jew, would have no tolerance or patience for the kind of idolatry present in Athens. But Paul does something surprising here. Rather than hellfire and brimstone, knocking stuff over, setting it on fire, he offers them understanding. He sees what is behind their many altars, a desire to know and please whatever god or gods are out there. Their bonus altar reflects that uncertainty. Gosh, just in case we've missed something here in the great pantheon, let's just have a catch-all altar, right? Paul finds common ground in this implicit admission of their ignorance and responds to them with charity. What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you. In other words, you know you're missing something. You know that. And I know what that something is. And Paul launches into an explanation of who God is. The God who made the world and everything in it, he who is Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needs anything, since he himself gives to all mortals life and breath and all things. Paul is saying, I know you're trying to get in touch with God with all these shrines and altars, but you've got it backward. God is not fashioned by our hands. We are fashioned by God's. God does not live in a house that we've built. And note, importantly, this includes the Jerusalem temple. But rather, we live in this creation that God has made. God does not need anything from us. No, we are totally dependent on the one who created us. What is more, God made this world in such a way that we would try to solve the riddle of life's meaning. Paul writes, he made all peoples to inhabit the whole earth so that they would search for God and perhaps fumble about for him and find him. Anybody here relate to fumbling about in your attempt to find and know and understand God? Professor Robert W. Walls writes about humanity's inherent religious sensibility. We all have an inherent religious sensibility. And Paul affirms this in the Athenians. They're on the right track for yearning to know God. But Paul is not going to leave it there. Good job! You guys are searching! No, Paul makes known to them the God they knew they didn't know. But in coming to know this unknown God, They learn that that God is the only God. And thus, all the idols are meaningless and must be rejected. The thing about an idol is it answers a legitimate question. It is a response to a legitimate need. Idols fulfill that inherent religious sensibility that God programmed us all to have. But idols are what happens when we are groping after God, as Paul writes, or as Paul says, rather, and we find something that meets that need, however imperfectly, and we settle for it. I'm going to say that again. Idols are what happens when we are groping after God, and we find something that meets that need, however imperfectly, and we settle for it. Idols are the wrong answer to the right question. Or at least they're the less right answers. A penguin with a sunburn. Now, obviously, we don't struggle with idolatry in the same way that the Athenians did. We don't have formal altars or shrines around the city where we offer sacrifices to those we treat as literal deities. But we would be lying if we said we are free of idol worship. Our idols are not statues, and our sacrifices are not burnt offerings. But there are plenty of other loyalties to which we are beholden as individuals and as a society. And while we don't make visible sacrifice, our idols also come with a cost. There are plenty of less right answers that we are willing to settle for, while God is inviting us to what is true and what is best. And this morning, I invite us into a posture of intellectual hospitality to consider three legitimate needs God created within us. Needs where we tend to settle for a less right answer. Surely there are many more than three that we could consider if we had the time. First, God has created us for delight in Him and His Word. But we have settled for the less good answer of the many smaller delights this world has to offer. Some of us settle for obviously self-destructive means of achieving delight. Substance abuse, casual sex, pornography, gambling. But for most of us, we've settled for insidious delights that quickly creep to take over our lives. We're on a constant treadmill of entertainment, from scrolling our phones to parties to planning getaways to chasing travel sports all across the country. We can't get enough of our quest for delight in forms that are not God. Second, God created us to find our value in Him. God created us and called us good. We know that God has created us for purpose and meaning, but instead of humbly seeking that purpose, we often settle for a sense of self-importance. And when we all are pursuing self-importance, it quickly devolves into a struggle over power. We want things the way we want them. We want to be the decision makers, not just for ourselves, but for others. We want to scale to the top of the heap. Long forgotten is the command that we are to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Third, God created us to seek a sense of security in Him. And we have figured out that we need something outside of ourselves to shield us from the harm and threats that come our way. One solution we've found is financial security. We need money for our basic necessities, for an emergency fund, for retirement, for kids' college funds, because another way toward achieving security is education, after all. more and more money means more and more options and more power, and so we keep after it, chasing the dollar. But there's never enough. There's never going to be enough. And there's never going to be that sense of security we seek, because what we are looking for isn't of this world. There is another idolatrous solution we find to our need for security, and that is through arms. As a country, we continue to pour money into military spending while our schools struggle. Our citizens are unhoused. 34 million of them are hungry, and our veterans are forgotten. And at a personal level, over the last few decades, we have somehow distilled down our entire understanding of freedom into the idol of unrestricted gun access, which has come with its own devastating costs. Stand your ground laws, coupled with fears stoked and cultivated by irresponsible media, have in only the last month resulted in young people being shot for mistakes as simple as knocking on the wrong door, pulling into the wrong driveway, opening the wrong car door, and playing hide and seek. And it has become difficult to keep up with which mass shooting we're sending thoughts and prayers for. Somehow, the Second Amendment has become America's untouchable idol. It is so holy. Holy literally means set apart. It is treated as so holy that we can't even talk about it. We are not like the Athenians. There is no invitation to talk and think more on this issue. No intellectual hospitality. We can't even brainstorm possible solutions to protect innocence from our idolatry. As a Christian minister, I wonder if this is what we think it means to find security in God. God created us to search for Him. But when our search for delight in God is traded for every shiny thing, we have for ourselves an idol. When we search for the source of our own value and instead seek out worldly fame, popularity, and power, we have made for ourselves an idol. When deep desires for security are met not by the God who fashioned us, but rather by financial policies that leave vast swaths of our country in poverty, and by a love of weapons content to accept child sacrifice on its altar, we are finding our security from idols rather than from the God made known to us in Jesus Christ. What is black and white and red all over? There are apparently lots of answers. What gives life meaning and purpose? Likewise, there are lots of answers. Our impulse to seek those answers is good. God designed us that way. But like the Athenians, we are challenged to put away those idols and pursue only the one true God, the one in whom we live and move and have our being, the one revealed to us in Jesus Christ, the one who gave his life for you and for me. Thanks be to God. Amen.